Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the OMG MotoGP podcast. We're going to be looking back at testing and to do it alongside myself, Harry Benjamin, his former Grand Prix rider and British champion, Keith Hewitt. And we're also joined by, well, ropey Wi-Fi, but it's Pete McLaren, Crash.net's MotoGP editor, coming live to us. Thank you, Pete, for your time as always. Post-testing, what are the big headlines for you? Bearing in mind, I suppose, after the final test, it's a 1-2 for Ducati.
That's right, Harry. Yeah, I mean, Ducati looks as strong as ever. I think if you were looking for an obvious favourite, it would be Ducati and Pecco once again. But I think there's reason to believe that Aprilia and KTM are closer. Honda and Yamaha, they've also made progress, but probably the Qatar test was a little bit of a reality check there in that they've still got work to do. They're lacking rear grip, I think, and that shows up in the timesheets and where they are. What, Fabio Quartararo 14th on the Yamaha, top Yamaha, Zarco 17th. So I think that probably reflects where they are, the work that they need to do. Of course, they've got the concessions now, so they can do that work. But I think for the start of the season, you're looking at the Ducatis versus, well, the Europeans basically at the front. But interesting, some interesting long runs or longer runs being put in by all sorts of riders. So it could be, you never quite know what's going to happen. Qatar, unique racetrack, of course. But I think it should be close.
Testing is the favourite that all riders say at the end of the day. But then again, they'll want to be on top. And it was Pecco that was absolutely blitzed the tyres. 1 minute 50.952 was Pecco's fastest lap. The all-time lap record prior was Luca Marini at 51.762. That'll give you some idea. That's a massively fast time. But of course, the track has changed. The whole facility has changed. They started the test with awful conditions. The place was an absolute disaster as far as how mucky the track was. But for me, there's a couple of standouts here, really. Rael Fernandez in fifth place on the new Trackhouse Racing team bike was there, which is very encouraging indeed for them. That looks like Davide Brivio, of course, has joined the team as management. That's an absolutely astute move, getting him on board. It would be interesting to see whether that can relate when we get to the actual racing. Disappointing, I suppose, a little bit for Fabio Quartararo, but you mentioned long runs a minute ago. Five lap runs, they were there or thereabouts at one point. Top speed, I noticed that if you added the average top speeds together at one point during the test, both Yamahas were the quickest in top speed. And they're only a couple of mile an hour down by the end of the time they chucked the time attack in at the end of the test session. So is that a good sign for Yamaha? I would say probably yes. Let's hope so. It's going to be one of those uphill struggles by the look of it against the improving Aprilias. Even KTM, you know, KTM looked to me like they were going to have a good test. Has it been a good test? We made the mistake last year of saying they were all at sea and it wasn't going to work for them. And all of a sudden they came back and did the business. So I ain't going to say anything as far as KTM are concerned. We will be getting Brad Binder on this show, and we'll be getting it from the horse's mouth a bit later on OMG MotoGP. So that'll be interesting as well.
Yeah, we will. He'll be joining us next week. But I mean, P, yeah, well, last year, what, we were all slating KTM. They've lost it. They're going to be so far back. They're going to have to claw it all back, and they absolutely blew us out of the park. I mean, tentatively, outside of Ducati, then, how would you kind of be looking at things? Do you think this top line speed from Yamaha is a bit of is more light at the end of the tunnel, or after what Fabio Quartararo has been coming out and saying, is it clutching at straws?
As Keith says, it's all, you know, if you're a rider, you want top speed, you want engine power, don't you? Certainly in a race situation, that's going to help you. And so what we've heard from Quartararo recent years, isn't it? Is that he wants a bike he can fight with, not just go fast around a racetrack on his own with. And top speed is a big part of that. And I think Keith's absolutely right. The Yamaha engine, the Honda engine, that seems to be what the riders feel is one of the big improvements this year with the bike. The trouble is, it's the rear grip they're still lacking. Then if you look across at Aprilia, their engine seems almost unchanged. And we hear, you brought up Ralph Nandez, he's on the 23 bike, but we hear he could be upgraded during the year, which sort of had people scratching their heads because, of course, the engine specification is frozen for each rider at the start of the season. Whatever they start with, they have to keep all year. So it was like, well, how can he be upgraded during the year? Then, of course, you realize that maybe there won't be many changes to the 24 Aprilia engine. That's why everything else can be upgraded, the aero, the chassis, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why potentially Raul will get this sort of upgraded bike midway during the season. But Aleix is a bit concerned about the engine on the Aprilia side. At KTM, they had a couple of engine specs. They're very cagey, KTM, with what they test, but they had a lot of parts to test. And yeah, they had a couple of specs to run through. And they were also quick on the top speeds as well, Keith, weren't they? They were up there. I think Brad Binder consistently, along with, as you say, Fabio, was setting top speeds, high top speeds, which again then helps you with running more aero, of course. This is the other thing. If you've got a strong engine, you can put more downforce on it and not lose out. So it's one thing leads to another in that regard. So yeah, I mean, the Aprilia and the KTMs, a lot of new parts visibly, probably the Aprilia, I guess you would look at the, you know, the bodywork on the back of the bike, quite radical, the F1 little mini diffuser on the rear tail, everything. That, you know, they're not slowing down on this development. And I think that's probably also why we only saw, coming back to Brad Binder, that he did a full race simulation, because there wasn't really time. They were testing so many new parts that there's just not time to do the full race simulations as they would have done in the past at the final day of testing.
I think the classic thing, let's just reiterate the engine power situation, shall we? Why riders are always, the obvious thing is you love more power. Of course you do. But that usually means that you've got to develop everything else, as you quite rightly said, Pete, as far as aero and stuff is concerned. But the reason a rider specifically needs that extra little bit of oomph down in a straight line is because otherwise you've done all the work through the twisty bits and you get on the straight and someone sticks it underneath you on the brakes because they've managed to get alongside you and it mires your corner speed so much. So Yamaha will be very keen to be using that slightly more top end. And as you say, it gives them the opportunity to fight, which means you can mire somebody else's overall lap time if you've managed to get up the inside of them somewhere. So Yamaha are in a better position regarding that. But, you know, what tends to happen is you just swap the problem somewhere else. You might have given yourself a whole load more horsepower, but then you've got to make sure, like you say, if you're lacking in traction, you can't put it down. But I tentatively, you've got to say that the Yamaha at Qatar looked better than perhaps we might have expected at the time. Cal Crutchlow was out, obviously. Augusto Fernandez, we've spoken to him, but Augusto Fernandez, he'd got a big comeback that he'd got to make after the Sepang test. He had a couple of crashes there. That wasn't so good for him either. Jack Miller as well looked quite good. I mean, he ended up in 11th place. I'm always, I hate using places when you get the timesheet at the end of a test because you don't know what everybody was playing at and where they were heading. And again, I'll use the KTM analogy, if you like, in that last year they didn't look like they were anywhere. And then by the time we got to racing proper, we were all back on song again. But Bagnaia, what did he end up? Just over a tenth quicker than Andrea Bastianini, with Aleix putting the Aprilia in there again, as Aleix does. I mean, he's always good for that time attack, end of day kind of thing. I've got all the timesheets here as we went through the hour. You know, Fabio DiGiantonio was right up there as well. You know, Bezzecchi was right up there as well. Bastianini was on top. Jorge Martin, we haven't even spoken about Jorge Martin, have we? He ended up in seventh place, but he was sort of there or thereabouts. I think there were a lot of, Marc Marquez was up there, you know, at one point as well on the Gresini bike. So that time attack, I think, at the end of the day. Of course, the other thing is we go from light into shade, don't we, at Qatar in the test. It goes from boiling bloody hot to just hot as the sun goes down. And that makes a huge difference as well, how that transition is managed by the teams going into the evening part of the session. So, I don't know, Qatar's a weird one. I'd rely more on Sepang test in time than maybe Qatar, but it's going to be a cracking year. That's for fact.
It is a weird one. It's sake. I mean, just qualifying, for example, if you take that in the race weekend, it's in the daylight, isn't it? You know, and you've got the race at night. So there's all sorts of weird things that go on with the Qatar race weekend. I think in some ways it favours the satellite teams having this test beforehand at the same racetrack, because they, of course, don't have as many new parts to try. So they can work on setup. And I think that probably plays into the hand. We've seen upsets in Ayr Bastianini, for example, haven't we? In recent years, Qatar coming out and winning. You wouldn't rule out Digi Antonio from the form he's been on of doing something similar, really, would you? And I think, you know, those guys, they can work on setup. You've got the factory guys, KTM, which we keep bringing up, constantly throwing new parts at the bike to gather data, then going away and sorting through it all, coming back with the bike that they think is the one that will work for them. And at the other end of the new parts table, you've got guys that have a bike that's completely proven, get on it, ride it, get your setup going. And there'll be some people that probably will go into the race weekend pretty much sorted and ready to go on the satellite bike.
Yeah, well, Keith mentioned this name just a few moments ago, Augusto Fernandez. And we've been talking about, well, testing has been going well for some and not well for others. I think left wanting a little bit more for Augusto Fernandez down at GasGas. But we caught up with him last week, so just a few days ago, actually. And we sent the newest member of the OMG team, Renita Vermeulen, our roving reporter, to go and have a chat with him.
The first thing I wanted to speak with you about was, you are fresh from the Sepang test. How did testing go for you?
Well, not so good. It didn't go as planned, for sure. We struggled a lot. But luckily it was just the first test of the season, so still a lot to do. Now we are in Qatar for two more days, and really important, because the last ones before the first race. So hopefully we can recover our work and put ourselves in the positions that we have to be this year.
Yeah, okay. So did you find that with the first test of the season where you weren't necessarily where you wanted to be, was that because the bike has changed a lot from last year, or is it just that you're starting fresh and there's a new challenge ahead of you?
No, we lost a bit of time the first day with the plan. I think the plan of work was not ideal, and then we struggled to recover. When you lose a day in testing, it's hard to recover it. So people work so well and so fast, and in the end, every year we improve lap times, and you cannot lose any minute of work. So it was all then a consequence. I lost a bit of confidence, had a couple of crashes. So we struggle, but here we are, minds reset and ready to, as I said, get back on our positions.
Awesome. So this is your second year in the Premier class, with last year, 2023, being your rookie debut in MotoGP. I wanted to know, in your opinion and your experience, how was it transitioning from Moto2 to MotoGP for you?
Well, was hard, was very difficult, more than what I expected before to move up. There's a lot of new things, a lot of the new tires, a lot of bottoms you have to switch on, switch off during the lap. So it's a new way of working that I had to get used to it. Also the new format with the sprint races on Saturday. So a lot of new things that made the year very difficult, but I think it was a positive one. We learned a lot. We were competitive. We were fast at the end of the year. So we are ready to have another one.
Like, one thing I noticed last year was you really didn't crash much at all. And I know no one likes to talk about crashing, but you did it. And I think you finished most of the races in the season. The last part of the season, you looked very strong as well. And even with all that crazy, silly season talk that you had to deal with, Did you find that your mentality then going into your first year in MotoGP was for you just to try and get as many laps as you could possible so you could just gather the data? Was that how you went into the season to go a little bit with just, yeah, banking the laps, getting the data to progress then this year?
Yeah, it was a little bit like that. Somehow when I discovered the MotoGP bike and how different it was, and as I said before, all the like the new tires and all the new things that I had to learn again, my strategy was to, yeah, I need time. I need as many laps as I can. I need to finish all the races possible, because doing the race time is where you learn the most. And yeah, I needed every lap of every race to have a quicker learning process, you know? And of course, I wanted to win as better than even a podium at the end of the season, because I saw myself competitive. But yeah, it will happen this year. So confident, because we had a good last part of the season and we built a lot of good things last season. So we are ready to have a good one this year.
But last season, you were so close to a podium. If you think back to Le Mans in France, you finished in fourth, right? So what was that weekend like for you, being so close to the front of the field? How did everything seem to work together for that weekend?
Well, this weekend, honestly, was in the end, it ended up being the best weekend of the season. So it happened so early on the season. At the fifth race of the season, I think we got the fourth place. So, you know, at that time, we weren't thinking that much on results. So it was just coming by work, and as I said, laps and laps. So was good. But I have to say, I felt more ready to have a podium at the end of the season. Like, I was more concerned about how to ride a MotoGP bike, how to manage the weekends and everything. So I was much more, yeah, ready to have a podium, but it didn't happen. So, but yeah, the level was increasing and our speed was increasing during all the year. But the best result was in Le Mans. But this weekend was awesome. Also was the home race for the team, so it was a very special one.
Yeah, that was so exciting watching you. And I saw the behind the scenes that MotoGP put online and just the excitement that was coming from you and the team. It was so awesome to watch. And so with your end of last season being so strong, now you're coming into your second season in MotoGP. You're no longer the rookie in the field. Apart from testing, we're not going to think about testing, but how do you feel going into your second year in MotoGP?
Yeah, I feel good. I feel good. I feel, as I said, ready to start from where we left last year with the speed we had. I think the bike has improved a lot. Obviously, we need to work a lot during these 2 days because testing is testing. But Sepang didn't go as planned, as I said. So we need to work a lot and finish these 2 days with our level. Not more, but with our level, back to our level, and from the first race, build from there. The bike is better. The bike, KTM did a good job, and Gas. So we are ready to enjoy this year and have good results.
So this season, you have a new teammate, and I know it's not the first time that you've had this teammate, and you've been teammates with Pedro Acosta. There's been so much hype around Pedro stepping up to the Premier class, and now this makes you the rider with the more experience in the Gas garage. How has this whole thing been with you having that hype with the extra teammate? Has it added any extra pressure for you to perform as the rider with the more experience?
Well, of course I have to perform because it's my second year. And I want to perform, not because it's my time, it's because I want to perform, I want to win. Having Pedro on the same team is good for me, because he has the level to be there. We saw him.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That he's straight away, he's fast with the MotoGP bike. He understands how this bike goes and how to be fast with this bike. So it will be good for me because I can compare a lot of data. And I can, as we did in Moto2, in the end, we increased the level of the team a lot. And we end up winning races. I won the championship. He won a lot of races at the last part of the season also. So we increased the level. And that's what I'm looking forward for this year, to work with him. And of course, it's the first one I have to beat. And we have to beat each other. But learn from him, of course, and use it to increase the level.
You mentioned there about the sharing of the data. I wanted to know, do you get to share the data between obviously yourself and your teammate, but with the other riders in the Piera Mobility Group with Jack and Brad? Do you share the data between you all?
Yes, we have access to all the data, also from Brad and Jack. Maybe not at the same time. I can open the Pedro's data. Once I'm on the box, I can ask for Pedro's data. But then maybe on the afternoon we can share with Brad and Jack whatever we want. So as I said, KTM is in Kasgas. We are working very good. We are improving a lot the bike and improving a lot everything. So I think we will have a good year. Everyone.
Definitely. So for you, I know you've spoken about getting on the podium. Is that one of your main goals for this year, or is there something else that you're wanting to achieve with your second year in MotoGP apart from being world champion?
Yeah, of course. Well, being world champion, of course, is the main goal, but it has to come first, the podium and the win. So, it's what I'm looking for this year, to be more constantly at the front, and especially to be the first peer mobility bike. That's my main goal, because it will be tracks that we can aim for podiums, we can aim for wins, or will be tracks that we can... that will be more difficult. So my main goal for all the races is to be consistently the first peer mobility bike on the grid, and then we will see what's coming.
I was also then just thinking that I wanted to ask you, with that big step up from Moto2 to MotoGP, and now you're in your second year, is there something that you've had to overcome or maybe change with your riding, or a habit that you've had on the bike that you've realized now this year is something that you've needed to change from last year and the previous years?
Yeah, coming from the Moto2 bike, I had to change a little bit my riding style when last year. I've been working on it during all the year and especially this winter to start the season strong. But I had to change a little bit my riding style for the MotoGP, and maybe because of the KTM. It asks different things of how the Moto2, how I was riding the Moto2. So I've been working a lot on it, and hopefully I can show it on track now.
Is there one thing as well that maybe you had to overcome or work a little bit harder to understand? Was it the difference in the tires? Was it the carbon brakes? Was there something that just took that little bit more for you to get to know from Moto2 and the previous years you've been racing?
I'm still doing it. I'm still learning, if I'm honest with you, how to deal with MotoGP in the end. It's a lot of work. I have to put a lot of hours in the box, work with a lot of people, but it will never stop. So that's the difference between MotoGP and Moto2. We got to put a lot of hours in, not only in the track, but in the box also, with data, with electronics, with the computer, and with my people around. So that's the most different and difficult part of MotoGP, but we have to do it.
So we put the questions out to some of the listeners of our podcast, saying if they had anything that they wanted to ask you, and we've had some of our listeners write back. So if you're okay, I'm going to ask some questions. So the first question comes from Alp Safer. I think I said that right. He's asked you, how different does MotoGP life feel in comparison to Moto2? And he put examples like working with the team or the extra media attention. How different does it feel for you?
Well, yeah, exactly. Working with the team first, but that's the funniest part and then what we enjoy because we are here. We are MotoGP riders and I do enjoy working with the team and everything, but what is the most difficult and different part is the media things we have to attend and all these parties is the difference between MotoGP and MotoGP.
Yeah, okay. So there's a lot more commitments, a lot more things that you have to do outside of just riding the bike. Like this, like talking to me. The next question comes from Riding Graphic. Interesting username. If you could ride any production bike around any circuit, what bike and what circuit would it be?
I would like to ride the KTM RC8 in a karting. I would like to put this bike on a karting because this... I tried this bike in Austria in the Austrian track, but I would like to put it on a karting track and on Spielberg. But I would like to put it on a smaller track. It's a very fun bike, and I'm sure I would enjoy it.
Awesome. So Lucas Nickel wants to know, what did your very first MotoGP race start feel like? If you could put it into words, what did it feel like?
Well, a lot of thoughts in my head that I wasn't sure where I was going to be before the first race, you know, like in terms of level, in terms of position. So a lot of questions that I was asking myself. But obviously then when I finished the first race was good. And then you get to know the how race is, how MotoGP race is. And then it's... everything is more relaxed, but the first one is like you have a lot of questions to yourself.
No, like the nervous and the excitement and the adrenaline, and then I bet that being at the start line of it would have just been like all of the feeling, everything at once. The last question I have from you is from Alisa, who has asked, has your off-season training changed at all from the previous years now that you understand the demands of a MotoGP calendar?
Yeah, physically and especially mentally, it's really tough with 22 races and with a lot of trips all over the world. So I've learned from last year. And I've changed a little bit my training this winter, but yeah, feeling ready.
One final question that I have for you is, actually it's a three-part question. What is your favorite circuit? And what is the circuit that you're most looking forward to racing this year? And what circuit do you wish MotoGP would race at that's not currently on the calendar? So to start again, what's your favorite circuit to race at?
My favorite race is, my favorite circuit is Assen. Because I want...
The new Assen or the old Assen?
The new one.
The new one.
The old one, because I just raced on the new one. I don't know the old one. And I had a couple of wins there in Moto2, so that's my favorite one, my favorite race. And this year with the MotoGP, I'm looking forward to... Yeah, Assen is one race that I'm looking forward to. Le Mans again. Misano. Tracks that I like and I really enjoy with my riding style racing there. And then one race that I'm missing, and there's also a track that I really like, is at Aragon, the Spanish race. Also, I've been very fast there in the past, so it's one race I'm missing. So hopefully this track comes again into our calendar.
Oh, that's so cool. I love it. Well, Augusto, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I wish you all the best for the 2024 season, and I can't wait to see you on that podium on the top step very soon.
Thank you very much.
So that was Renita there talking to Augusto Fernandez. And yeah, Pete, I mean, not the most successful test for Augusto that he would have been wanting. And of course, there's going to be a lot of eyes on him because of who his teammate is as well this year.
That's right. Yes, a teammate again. They were teammates in Moto2 when Augusto won his title and Pedro was a rookie, but yeah, certainly all eyes are on Acosta, and he's come out swinging, isn't he, from the start of pre-season testing this year. While, as you say, Augusto's been on the back foot a little bit, but as he makes clear in that interview, he's got high expectations of himself. He knows he's got to deliver this year. Year two, it's the time to get the results. And to be honest, Sepang got off to a slow start. The test there, it was a bit better for him at Qatar, but I think definitely work still to do going into the new season for him.
I think Augusto was quite fluid in what he was saying. I mean, I think that learning a new bike, you know, from Moto2 to MotoGP, it's still quite a big step, despite the fact Moto2 is closer to MotoGP now, perhaps because of the electronics and so on and so forth. But hell of a difference in riding style that's still developing. So you can understand what Augusto was on about regarding that side of it. It's an uphill struggle. But again, you know, I think Renita was right in what she said. Last year, he didn't crash a lot last year. He was learning all the way through the year. That is an important factor. You've got to keep yourself fit if you're going to be there. It's a long season this year. The worst thing you can do is get frustrated, you know, push just that fraction too hard, pick up an injury early on, and that's going to mire your entire year. And it will wreck a career. You know, he will be out at the end of the year if he's not performed. And we know, okay, you know, KTM generally as a company are quite ruthless when it comes to hiring and firing. So he might be a former world champion, but he might find himself in some difficulty at the end of the year if he hasn't picked up enough pace. Wish him well. I like the guy. He's eloquent. He makes an effort on all fronts. You know, he's the right man for being in the paddock. He's a good man to be with GasGas. And it's a good team, you know, as far as looking after people are concerned. And he needs that at the moment. He didn't have a fast test this time out, but my concern would be whether he had one that satisfied him, which takes him into racing. It's where you find that benchmark that I think he was talking about it in that, you know, he wants to start the season in the right place and then improve from there rather than be catching up all the time. So that default mark for him as a rider is very important when he gets out to the first round.
It certainly is. Another person who didn't have a good test, or really any testing at all, Pete, Franco Morbidelli, a man who has been under pressure the last couple of years. He's got a new team now, and this is not the way he would have wanted to start his 2024 campaign.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I don't know if Keith can think of an example, but I can't think of another time where there's been a rider that's missed all of the pre-season testing recently, anyway, in recent years, and got into the first race, especially when they've changed team, they've changed bike. The good news for him, of course, is that he's changed to probably the best sorted out bike on the grid. And we've seen how quick the 24 version of the Ducati is. Pecco saying it's just better in every area, which is not what his rivals will want to hear. But that's also good news for Morbidelli, somebody who's going to be jumping on the bike, having done a couple of hours at Valencia last November. So virtually nothing on the bike. As you say, he's been sidelined as a precaution because he was knocked unconscious. The doctors just felt it'd be risky to if he took another hard hit to the head so soon, shall we say, or in the weeks after the previous blow. So that's why he's been sidelined. But he was there in Qatar working with the team, talking to the team, and there's no reason to believe he won't be on the bike for the race weekend.
Morbidelli's one of those guys, and if he was in my queue for an aeroplane, I'd be switching planes. It's I've got to say that he's got to be the unluckiest bloke that I know at the moment, and starting off the season in the way that he is just, and the trouble is, he's, you know, whatever anybody says, yeah, he's on the 2024 bike, that just unloads all the pressure onto him. If he was on an old bike and he had half an excuse, then that would be fine, but he hasn't got one. I mean, he'll handle it. He's eloquent, he's intelligent, he's fast. If he can make all of those things work for him this year, I feel for Morbidelli, but it just seems to me that it might be he's been given another chance this year, and it has started off in the worst possible way. All we can say is wish him well, hope he makes that comeback that we know his talent is capable of.
Absolutely. Let's end. I know we haven't been able to sort of go in depth on everybody, but you'll understand if you saw the behind the scenes of the recording of this, because Pete's Wi-Fi is clinging on by a thread. So we're going to finish things up. And talk about Marc Marquez, of course, you know, the biggest name in MotoGP. All eyes are on him, Pete, on that Gresini. Where did he finish his final day? It was fourth, wasn't it? Just behind Aleix Espargaró and the two Ducatis. Had a crash, though, in the final stages. But I think a lot of people were crashing, really. A lot of people were pushing.
That's right. Yes. So that was his first crash from the Ducati. So after the end of his sixth day on the bike, it sort of finally happened. As he said, it was always going to happen at some stage. So maybe get that one out of the way before a race weekend. Only a small tip off, I think, turn four, nothing big. He did do a long run as well, but it doesn't appear on the timesheets. And so he was sort of asked about that because he was speaking about his long run being, you know, an improvement as well as his time attack speed. It seems his transponder had a problem, so we don't know exactly what his lap times were there. But yeah, he thinks he's around fifth, sixth place at the moment. He thinks he's not up there with the Pecos, the Bastianinis, the Martins, those the big three, if you like, the obvious three at the front. So that's how he goes into this new season. But I mean, Marc Marquez, if he's in the top five, six, then in a race situation, you know, look out.
I think a 51.3, 0.4 under the outright circuit record as it was, is not too bad, is it? I think you'd go away from that with only one crash as well. By Marc Marquez's standards, that's a good day out. So I would definitely say that he's starting. I like the slightly subdued, you know, humble, modest, quiet style that he's really taken on with this Gresini team at the moment. You know, no one can write this kid off of, well, he's not a kid anymore, but no one can write him off of what he's capable of doing. He goes good at Qatar. He likes Qatar. It's worked out for him well in the past. So we'll see whether he comes back with a bang. But I mean, you can't write the bloke off. There's no doubt about that. He's going quick. He's about where he ought to be. I mentioned that default with Morbidelli a bit earlier on. You know, you want to start. With Augusto Fernandez, you want to start off at that point, and he has found a great level to start his season with. Frankie Carchetti, his crew chief, is going to be working with him this year. They're just settling in together. That's the other thing you've got to remember. It's not just about settling in with a new bike, new team. You've got a new crew chief. You know, Santi Hernandez has been his long-time crew chief in the past. He did move across with him. So there's a few moving parts in the background that Marquez is getting used to. And I think that he's there or thereabouts. Don't write him off for sure. He's going to be there.
You can never write him off, can you? I think one thing's for sure. I think MotoGP certainly in the first few rounds of 2024 should be a bit of a box office smash hit with so many top riders and teams in the hunt. But that is just testing all done. 2 weeks, just less than that, whenever you come to watch or listen to this review until racing action kicks off in anger. And the OMG team will be here with you all the way, looking forward and looking back at every race of the season and bringing you some exclusive interviews with riders and other people from the MotoGP paddock. But we shall leave it there. My thanks to Keith Ewan and a big thank you to Pete McLaren for clinging on with his Wi-Fi. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.